What do you do when things are finally going your way? Financially, you've implemented some things. It's going smoothly. You've been paying off debt. You've been building wealth. You've been doing all the things that you dream to do. And then boom, a family member calls and they have an unexpected expense or bill and they're asking for your help. And it's been ingrained in your family as Latinos that you help your family. But to what extent do you help your family? To what extent? Because they need help. So you want to help them, but that may put you in a bad predicament. So what do you do? What do you do? After all, you've done all these things. You've come such a long way. So how do you continue to become financially confident and independent when those cultural beliefs that have been ingrained in you continuously clash with those financial skills that you've been building? Well, you're in for a treat because that is exactly what we're going to talk about in today's episode. You are listening to Her Dinero Matters, the podcast helping Latinas have increased confidence and control over their finances. My name is Jen Hempel, and as an accredited financial counselor, my mission is to help you be more confident and simplify your finances so you can save more, get out of debt quicker, and build your wealth. Listen, I don't think there's anything wrong with helping la familia. But where I start to have an issue is when we help la familia and we're putting ourselves in a predicament, in a not a good one. That's where there's these feelings where these, what do? You don't want to put yourself in a bad financial situation, especially when you've been working so hard to get yourself out of it or improve your financial situation. So what exactly do you do? And it is a hard decision to make. In our cultura, generally speaking, it seems to be an expectation in our families. Not all families, but it just seems to be this expectation that we have to provide, that we have to help out, that we have to pitch in with our families. Doesn't matter the case, the scenario. And we don't want to put ourselves in a bad predicament. That's the thing. We don't want to do that because we've worked so hard to get to where we're at, right? Fortunately for you and for me, we have a returning guest and now best-selling author, Gigi Gonzalez. She wrote the book, Cultura and Cash. And she is going to share from the heart her own experience. And she's very transparent. She's just a joy to talk to. And you're going to get so much out of this episode. In fact, in this episode, we're going to get into the following things. Gigi is going to share with us her insights on what it means to be a bicultural Latina and why it really matters. In this part, I really had some aha moments or light bulb moments, if you want to call them. She's also going to share with us all about her First Gen 5 framework, and she's going to give us some tips or a two-step approach for boundaries. And that is definitely going to come in handy for those kind of conversations when La Familia calls and they need some financial help. So let's get to it and let's go have this conversation with Gigi. Gigi, it is so great to have you back. You've been with us before, but now you're back because we've got something in store for those of you listening, Cultura and Cash. Now, y'all, I have to say, this is my copy and it's staying with me. I'm not giving this one away. You put some really some kind words in there. So welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you, Jen, for having me back. I appreciate it.
Yes. And today last time we focused on you in terms of us being a first gen Latina. Today, we are going to be talking about first gen because your book, Cultura and Cash, is about the first gen experience. But we're talking more about the book, even though it's going to be intertwined with you. So I'm really excited to dig in. First of all, congrats again on the book. Congrats on the launch and you're feeling good.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's been a lot of work, but it's been very rewarding to see the love and support from the community for this project that I've been working on for a year and a half. It's made it all worth it.
Right, right. I'm sure it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah, you know,
I wanted to start off with, because last time when you were here, you talked about some of the challenges as being first gen Latina. So I'm going to play that before we get into it. So here we go. Can you tell us what other are some other challenges that first gen Latinos face?
Definitely like navigating money with family or money at all. Just understanding how money works is not really something that's taught to us at home. It's not taught to us at school. So having to learn that on our own. But then for me, I had a lot of challenges navigating family expectations of what they expected financially from me. You know, I was very much seen as the one who, quote unquote, made it because I had gone to college, but they just didn't realize, you know, the debt burden that I was carrying. Like, sure, I had the bigger income potential because I was making more money, but I also had, you know, $30,000 in student loans. I had $20,000 in a car debt. So even though I was on paper making more, I also had, you know, bigger expenses. So yeah, there were a lot of challenges with family when I was younger and kind of balancing what they expected from me and the type of financial support that I wanted to give them, you know, but also while still taking care of myself and not forgetting about my own finances and getting myself into more debt or into more financial stress because I was helping family.
So I wanted to play that because you really expanded upon the challenge. How does it feel you hearing yourself? I mean, months and months later, because since then, there at that point in time, your book was done, I believe. And
yeah, it was in production.
How does it feel hearing yourself? Has something shifted?
Yeah, honestly, it's a little triggering. Whenever I talked about my money experience before, it was fine because it was something behind me. But now that I'm getting ready to narrate the audiobook, which the narration will happen in May, and I'm working with a voice coach on how to emote so that it's not just like a boring narration. By having to emote, I have to put myself back in like 24-year-old Giovanna's shoes and relive those emotions. And I didn't realize it was going to be this emotional. So thank God for therapy. Thank God for my voice coach that I'm not doing it alone. But yeah, even listening to this now, I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to revisit this in the narration.
Right. Would you think that even as you've done this book, and I know I'm going off from what I wanted to ask you just now, but as you've done this book, you mentioned some of these things have been triggering and some of the emotions that it has been brought up, has also writing this book have been a form of therapy for you?
No. Sorry, that's the truth. It has not.
I wasn't expecting that question. I should say.
No, there's no way, because there's still a lot of unresolved family problems because of money. And I've just learned to come to terms with it and be okay with it. But the part that makes all the blood and tears like worth it is the feedback that I've gotten from my readers. And I actually, my therapist encouraged this for me to print my three favorite Amazon reviews and have them visible to just kind of remind myself of, you know, that these challenges weren't for nothing. You know, I went through these hard lessons to be able to pass on this knowledge to a younger reader. If we have space, I'd love to read one of them if we have time.
Yeah, if you feel it's appropriate now, go for it.
Yeah. So I'm staring right at it. It says, from the very first page, I knew this book was going to change my life. As a first gen Latina who doesn't understand all the financial jargon, nor feels like it was written with her goals in mind, this book was just what I needed and more. I had to pause several times to wipe the tears that kept coming as each page told my story with such precise and intricate detail. First gen or not, if you're of Latin descent, you need this book like yesterday. So again, that's more impactful to me. Like, not so much the writing of the book, but hearing the support from the community.
Absolutely.
And hearing that they feel seen. Yeah, that makes it all worth it. And it makes me dig my heels in and like, I was right with what I was saying in the book. Because I wrote from the heart and I didn't know if it was going to hit or not, but I wrote from how I authentically felt. And I'm so glad that it's been resonating with my reader.
And I'm glad. I mean, it was definitely going to. Now, one of the things you spoke about challenges in the audio, and obviously the reader that posted that beautiful testimonial also resonates with that challenge. And one of the things that I appreciate is that you call that first gen experience a different starting line. Right. Uh-huh. And you also share how 72% of Latin and millennials provide financial support to their families, right?
Yeah.
You've also developed what you call the first five gen framework to help you overcome, you know, this being that first starting, you know, a different starting line, I should say. So if you could tell us briefly what that first gen five framework is and how does it exactly help that first gen starting at a different place in that line.
Yeah. So when I had to think about what was my goal with this book, you know, because I have so much financial knowledge, but I knew that in one book, I couldn't teach everything that my reader had to know about money. There's just too much to cover. I mean, I can write a whole book just on investing, right? And I knew that it was only going to be a chapter. So what I thought about was like, okay, I want this book to inspire action. I want my reader, which would be a first gen Latina, or other first-gen professionals to understand that our starting line is different because we don't receive generational wealth or the generational knowledge that some of our more privileged peers do. But the solution would be my framework, the first gen five. So I devise these five pillars that I'm like, if you work on these five money pillars at the same time, you are going to be pretty in a pretty solid space. And I'll share why. So the five pillars are building savings for emergency funds. The other one is budgeting. The other one is learning how to pay off debt and having a debt payoff plan. The fourth one is learning how to build credit. And the fifth one is investing for long-term wealth. And I see it as a holistic way to tackle your finances because it addresses past you, current you, and future you without it being too overwhelming. And I've gotten a lot of positive feedback that it was simple and easy to digest. Yeah, I didn't want to overwhelm my reader. I just wanted to give my reader the basics of what all these things were so that they could feel empowered to start their money journey.
Right. And it also, because they are at a different place in line or starting line, as you, I love how you put that, as you can tell, they need that quick empowerment, something quick that they can start off with. And I think this does the job. This does the job. Yeah. Now, the other thing, another part of the book that I feel like really hit home for me was you talk about being bicultural and how it, and managing money, right? And if you could talk to us a little bit about what, you know, being bicultural, managing money, why does it even matter?
Yeah, it matters because the American money culture is very different than most Latin American money cultures. So the U.S. American money culture is very much individualistic, where you just take care of your own finances, you pull yourself up by the bootstraps. If you have money problems, you don't complain to other people about it or ask them for quote unquote handouts. You figure it out, you charge on a credit card and you move on with life. With the collectivist society, which is most of Latin America, we're very communal, we're very family oriented. So it's a complete opposite. The first people you go to when you need help with finances is your family. And you're expected to be there for family when they need you. You're supposed to be self-sacrificing and do whatever it takes to support family in their time of need. And as a bicultural Latina, meaning that, you know, soy de aquí, de allá, right? I'm Mexican American. I'm both. I had to learn how to blend these two clashing money cultures so that it worked according to my values and that I was still able to make financial progress.
Absolutely. And I definitely, why it hit home for me, because I definitely have seen the clash, not just here living in the States, but even in Colombia, being as a result of parents that are from two different cultures, my dad being American and my mom being in Colombia, just seeing early on how the differences and how they perceive money and how they viewed money, how they manage money, and coming to the States, just another culture shock of how the system is, what's available, what's not available. So that for me really, really hit home, and how you communicated it so eloquently and so well. The other part that I think is so important is boundaries. And you discuss boundaries, and I've seen you speak, I think, on TikTok or social media about boundaries, which I think is so good. So talk to us about boundaries with family. And when should you have, because some as Latinas and as Latinos or Latine, we have that tend to want to help family, and being stuck in these two different cultures now. And then there's this expectation sometimes of needing to help financially. So How do you establish those boundaries? When do you help? When do you not?
Yeah, I had to learn from personal experience because for a long time, anytime I was asked for financial support from my family, I said yes because that's what was instilled in me, to say yes because it's family and you always show up for family. But then I found that was leaving me broke and keeping me in debt and making me feel resentful of my family. And I'm like, these are the people I love most. Like, what am I doing wrong? And that's when I learned that I had to create boundaries around my money. And when I tried implementing these boundaries, it was also not well received. Because again, in our culture, like boundaries are like, what are boundaries? They're very new because we're so enmeshed. So there's a lot of resistance when you try to set even time boundaries with family. Like if they're used to seeing you every weekend and, you know, having like the weekend carne asada and then you miss a couple of them, oh, you don't care about us anymore. You never come by, you know, so they'll guilt trip you about things like that. You know, boundaries about comments, you know, making fat phobic comments anytime that they see you, oh, you've gained weight or you've lost weight, right? So even that, like we're learning to say like, you know, please don't comment on my body. I don't feel comfortable. And they're just like, oh, like I can say whatever I want because what, you know, I'm there. That's what they're used to culturally. They're just used to being able to do and say and ask whatever they want. But yeah, I had to learn that for me to stop running in place and to make progress with my finances, I had to have boundaries around my money. I developed a two-step approach to help my reader navigate boundaries because I know a lot of my readers understand that they are important to implement, but they're like, how? So I called it the quiero y puedo approach. So first ask yourself, ¿quieres? Do you want to? Do you want to financially support family in this way right now? So let's say that they ask you for money to help cover a medical cost and you know it's important and you want to help out and pitch in because the rest of the family's pitching in, right? That would be a situation where we're quietos and you move forward to the next step. I've recently had an example of where I asked myself, do I want to? And the ask for my family was help us cover the, what's it called one day? Cremation costs. Help us cover the cremation costs of the family dog that we just that passed away. It wasn't going to be much money, honestly. It wasn't much, pero no quería. I didn't want to. And the reason I didn't want to was because the dog had been sick for a long time and I had pleaded them, please let her go. Please put her down. And instead they let this poor little chihuahua suffer. So when they asked me for money, I said, no, you're not getting money. And I felt very comfortable because again, I went through this two-step approach of do I want to? I know if I would have given them money, I would have been resentful because I would have been like, you guys didn't even listen to me. Poor Lola had to suffer for nothing. So I felt good with that decision because I took time to look inward. So again, first ask yourself, do you want to? If you don't want to, then that's it. And that's when you set the boundary. If you do want to, then you move to the next step of like, puedes, can you? So that's great that you have the willingness to help. But back to the example about helping with the medical expense, do you actually have the money to provide that support right now? Because sometimes, you know, if we lend more than we actually have, or if we give more money than we actually have, we're just setting ourselves back in our finances by either creating a debt hole or, you know, we're not making the savings that we were supposed to make that month. And again, you're running in place and you're never going to improve. So I encourage my reader to think about like, to evaluate whether you actually can, like, do you have a debt payoff plan or are you making just a minimum payment on your loans, right? Are you doing some type of long-term investing for your retirement, or are you completely ignoring your retirement because you're struggling with everything else? Like if you're living paycheck to paycheck, you're probably not in a position to be helping others, even though you want to. So I offer my reader to extend support in other ways. You know, support for family isn't just with money. It can be with time, with resources, doing research, doing chores around the house to make things easier for them. But that's what I have found has worked for me, to use that two-prong approach.
Love it. You always have to have a system. I know for us, we just have an account where we just set a little bit of money. And if we want to, we look at that account. And that's what we have. We don't touch because we don't, like you said, you don't want to set yourself back because you took X amount of money out and then it set you back in bills or whatever you're trying to do with your finances, keyword,
right?
Your finances. Now, as we're recording this, you've already been full blown promotion on, you know, with this book. And I've seen we heard some of the feedback today, and I'm sure you've gotten a lot more feedback because I've seen it. So of course you're the goal in the book is really to impact and help first-gen Latinas. But now that has been out for a bit and you've gotten some feedback, share with us maybe some feedback or just comments, whatever the case may be, that you were just blown away, unexpected, you know, you weren't expecting it because you know you're going to get, I really connected, you know, it spoke to me. But was there somewhere along the way where someone said something that just was like, I was not expecting this at all to come from my book?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was expecting my reader to, that was a goal for my reader to feel seen, heard, and validated. Mm-hmm. So I keep seeing those comments, those DMs, those reviews on Amazon. But I think what I wasn't expecting, because I was worried when I was writing the book that people might feel defeated by me exposing the different starting line, but instead they feel motivated. Mm. They're like, I always felt that I was behind, but I didn't know why. And now that she exposed it as to why, like I see it's not my fault. It's just some people had more privilege, because what I explained is I thought that it was only the one percenters that had this generational wealth, but you know, average middle-class American also receives, what's the number that I cite in the book? I think $40,000 inheritance, something like that. So again, that's still substantial money, right? That helps pay for a down payment, mm-hmm. For real estate investment property, just, you know, for a college education. There's different ways that helps somebody's money journey. So I wasn't expecting that, for people to be like, hearing that I'm behind was refreshing and eye-opening. And now I have the tools that I need to catch up. And that's good. That's again, it was written to inspire action. But yeah, I was worried that they would be like, oh, what's the point? If we're behind, what's the point? But instead, they saw through my journey that I was behind too. I'm just like you. And I live the soft life now. That's how I end the book, by saying I have to relive my broke B era to retell these lessons and these money challenges that I've had. But now I have a very soft life. I'm debt free. I live in a high rise. I travel on international vacations. I'm financially secure. You know, I'm not financially free because I still have to work, but I'm financially secure. I can splurge on things, and I'm not living that paycheck to paycheck lifestyle anymore. I was able to break the cycle.
So being that this book is for first gen Latina, can you tell us, is this book good for maybe someone that's just getting started with their finances, or could it be for that first gen Latina that maybe is a little more, has been managing their finances, doing maybe investing, or who exactly out of the first gen Latina, how would you describe that first gen that should read this book?
Yeah, I would say I wrote this book for somebody who's in their early 20s or mid 20s. I'm 34. I know people my age that have read the book and they've benefited greatly from it too. Some people have been like, it's a great refresher. I knew a lot of these things, but hearing them in from a different point of view was really helpful. But I have gotten that one bad review that was like, oh, this is very basic. I knew a lot of this stuff. And I'm like, really? So you've read other books that talk about how there's individualistic and collectivist money cultures? I don't think so. I know that for a fact. That does not exist, because right. I've read a bunch of money books. But yeah, that person clearly was a little bit too advanced. And, you know, I could have made an advanced book, but that's not what I wanted. I wanted something that was accessible and relatable so that it was beginner friendly for first gen Latinas that are like, okay, I just finished my college education. I have this corporate job. I'm making a steady income. How do I learn to manage this money? Because I was never taught those skills at home or at school.
Now, out of all the book, if there was one thing or one takeaway that you would like that your reader to get, what would that be for you?
To be patient with their money journey. I know when I started learning about money, I was really excited to implement everything I was learning. And I saw that the progress was slow, but it's supposed to be slow, especially if you come from immigrant roots where we don't have a lot, right? So it'll be slow. But the same way that, you know, you can't expect to go to the gym one time in your life and do a couple of sit-ups and have abs the next day, right? You have to consistently show up.
It doesn't happen like that.
Right. Yeah, you have to consistently show up, keep up with your nutrition, keep up with your supplements, right? So it's the same thing. You have to consistently do the same thing, little things over a long period of time. And I encourage people to track their net worth, right, as they're making this financial progress, to see that their debt is decreasing, to see that their savings are increasing, to see that their investing is increasing too, because sometimes it can be like, oh, how am I still not there yet? And also don't compare your journey to others. A lot of people are living off credit card debts. You know, you see them having all these trips and all these shopping sprees, but they're buried in credit card debt, or they have generational wealth that they don't talk about. Their parents are picking up the tab. So just stay in your lane, stay patient, and keep going at it.
Patience, flexibility, tracking that net worth, even though, and I agree, I think it's just so important to track your net worth, because there was a guest that I had years ago that she put it so succinctly and so beautifully stated that the net worth, no matter where you're at, like let's say you're in the negative net worth right now, it tells a story of your life at that period in time, right? And it's nice to just track it and see the progress. So just always remember, it's just that story in your life. It's not, you know, maybe you're going through some challenges and that's okay, but that's something that you can overcome, pues superarlo. What are you most proud of? You've done a lot, and I've, you know, congratulated you, because I honestly, from the bottom of my heart, you've done such a great job with not just the book, the promotion, everything. So what would you say is that one thing that you're most proud of?
I would say, honestly, I'm most proud that I was able to secure the Eva Longoria endorsement. And that's because Eva Longoria means a lot to me. I know a lot of people are fans of Eva Longoria because she's a big community leader and an activist in our community. But to me, she's more than that. I've adored this woman for 15 years. I started liking her when she did Desperate Housewives back in the day. But then I followed her career after Desperate Housewives. And I saw how she went back to school to major in Chicano studies because she knew she wanted to do advocacy work with the Latino community, and she wants to be well informed on these issues. So I'm just like, wow, you know, she's not just an actress. She really wants to use her platform to make a difference and uplift her community with her. And, you know, she directed that movie, the Flamin' Hot, the Hot Cheetos movie, because she wanted positive representation of Latinos in Hollywood, where we're not just, you know, gangsters, or, you know, we're not just, you know, homework, you know, like gardeners, right? Like Hollywood has like this one dimensional view of Latinos, but Latinos, we do so much. We're not just one type of trope, right? I mean, the fact that I got her stamp of approval, just, I still can't believe it, honestly. It still hasn't hit me.
And that's so fantastic. And how did that happen? If you could tell us, like, behind the scenes. So did you just say, hey, Eva, what's going on?
I actually did.
Can you give me an endorsement?
I
know that's – oh, okay.
I actually did. I DM'd
her. Second question I've asked.
Yeah, she actually had DM'd me a video because I had tagged her in something, and she answered my question with a video response. So I actually had direct communication to her Instagram account that way. You know, like I was no longer in the junk folder. I was like in her general inbox. So I tried that route. It didn't work. I tried it a couple times. It didn't work. And then eventually the route that I took was going through the grant that I won. So I won a $50,000 grant to write this book, and the grant was sponsored by three companies. It was sponsored by TikTok, Macro, and Unbelievable. And Unbelievable is Eva Longoria's production company. So that was my in. When it was time to start getting blurbs and endorsements, I said, hey, remember this project that you supported and you awarded this grant for? My project's done. I'd love your consideration. And I had a strong pitch. It wasn't just like, oh, here, you know, I had to put a whole pitch together of why I thought I was deserving of her endorsement. And there was a lot of vetting, as there should be. But yeah, when I got it, I'm just like, this is unreal, because it just, you know, elevates the credibility of the book to another level. And like I said, she is my lifelong idol. So it means a lot to me, to you know, younger Giovanna.
That is beautiful. And also, it also supports what she's doing, especially because that was one of the funding agents, if you will, for the work. And she can say, hey, this is a result of what we did with the money we get, which I think is fantastic. Well, this has been so great having you back. Congrats again.
Thank you, Jen. I hope you
take some time to rest after all the work you've been putting in. And thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I think you probably can agree with me that after this conversation, how our Latino culture really influences how we think about money is huge. And because sometimes when we're not aware of things, we don't have an understanding of what's going on, or why are why things are happening, how they're happening. But understanding that influence of our culture gives us a new perspective, gives us an appreciation, and gives us a way to be better responsive to it, right? On how to act. So I really, really appreciated her insight. I really appreciate that she wrote this book, Cultura en Cash. And remember, if you haven't picked it up, you definitely should pick up a copy. Because I know for me personally, my biggest shift or aha moment was the perspective of being bicultural and really how impactful that is, how really navigating our Latino roots and then being here in the States. I never really thought about that perspective and what it means and how it really impacts my life and my family's life. So that I thought was really interesting. So again, there'll be a link in the show notes on how you can buy or purchase a copy of this book, because we always want to support our Latino community. And she is a Latina author. And remember, Latina authors and financial Latina authors or Latino authors, at that, there's not that many of us. So be sure to pick up a copy of her book. Next week on the podcast, I'm going to be sharing with you and really talking with you about probably what I consider our biggest money mistake, why it has been our biggest money mistake, why it has hurt me to the core and financially, as well as some of the lessons that we have learned from this investment. So I'm going to talk about that all next week. Stay tuned for that. Bueno, pues that is everything. I'm happy that you joined us on this episode, on this podcast. I realize you have a lot of podcasts to choose from, but you chose to hang out with us. Be sure to check out the show notes over at jenhemphill.com/393. That is jenhemphill.com/393. And if you haven't checked out the show notes, you totally should, because if you love this topic, we always have recommended episodes and those show notes that are relevant to the topic at hand. So make sure you check that out. And remember that being the reina of your money starts now simply by claiming it. I believe in you, and so should you. Nos hablaremos el próximo jueves. Ciao.